Everyone got to work. Several of the troopers carried the dead outlaws into the trees and started digging a grave big enough to hold both bodies. Some of the men looked a little queasy about handling the corpses, but the others seemed to have been hardened to sudden death by seeing so many of their comrades crushed in that avalanche. Gustafson sent two men down the canyon to watch for the devils, as Bo had suggested. The Texans, with Gustafson's help, unloaded the packs filled with gold bars from the horses and lugged them back into the cabin. The Owl Hoot, who had been running out on the gang, had loaded less than half the gold that was stacked inside.
That gold's worth more money than I'll ever see in my whole life, even if I live to be 100.
Yeah, it's quite a sight. You ain't getting tempted now, are you, Olaf?
Me? I've worked hard all my life. I wouldn't know what to do with myself if I was a rich man. If all I had to do was lie around and take it easy, it probably wouldn't be a month before I was so restless I couldn't stand it.
I know the feeling. We've never been interested in getting rich, have we, Scratch?
Speak for yourself. I reckon I could have me a little hacienda somewhere and be perfectly happy to do nothing the rest of my life.
Sure.
When they had all the gold back in the cabin, they unsaddled the horse in the corral. Smoke still rose from the chimney. There were a lot of tracks in the snow, but when the outlaws returned, they wouldn't be able to tell that those tracks hadn't been made by the men they had left here. For the most part, everything looked like it had when the rest of the devils left for Deadwood, except for the horses belonging to the cavalrymen. A couple of the troopers led the animals back up the ledge and picketed them well away from the rim, where they wouldn't be seen. With that done, Bo, Scratch, and Gustafson discussed their strategy again.
Olaf, I think you should take four of the men up there in the rim and wait with them there. We'll put three men over in the trees, and Scratch and I will wait in the cabin. We'll confront the devils first.
You'll take the most dangerous job, in other words.
Or the easiest, depending on how you look at it. We'll have a good position to defend if we have to, and once the devils see that we got their loot and they're caught in a crossfire, maybe they'll surrender. Quién sabe?
Yeah, sure they'll surrender. You really think that bunch of murdering thieves will give up?
Probably not.
Likely it'll take shooting.
Call in your sentries. We'll all get in position, and then we'll be as ready as we'll ever be. All we can do then is wait.
All right. I still think you two are running the biggest risk, but I don't suppose there's any point in arguing.
Nope, none at all.
It would take the devils at least half the day to get back from their raid on the bank in Deadwood. Bo didn't expect them to show up at the hideout until sometime in the afternoon. That gave everyone time to take advantage of the supplies stored in the cabin and have a hot meal of bacon, beans, and coffee. After that, the cavalrymen took their positions, and Bo and Scratch settled down to wait in the cabin. Scratch opened the shutter on the window a couple of inches so he could keep a watchful eye on the approach through the canyon.
You giving any more thought to who's really behind all this trouble, Bo? We know the devils are working for somebody.
Yeah, I thought about it a lot. I'd still say Nicholson is the most likely suspect, but something about the whole situation makes me think he's not the hombre in charge.
Maybe we can take one or two of those Owl Hoots alive. Most fellas get mighty talkative when they're staring a hang rope in the face.
That's what I'm hoping. The law would need evidence to convict the ringleader, and the testimony of a couple of the devils might be enough.
This law and my gun belt don't need a lot of evidence, just the truth.
The hours dragged, as they always did when violence loomed, but the time of its arrival was uncertain. The sky brightened slightly as the sun climbed to its highest point, but the clouds never really broke. And then the light began to dim again. Bo and Scratch took turns, watching from the window. Bo was standing there when a flicker of movement from down the canyon caught his eye. There was a man on horseback down there.
Scratch!
Scratch was sitting at the table. He got up and came over to join his old friend at the window.
One rider, about 300 yards down the canyon.
Yeah, I see him. You reckon he's alone?
He's probably a scout. Since we can see him, that means he can see the cabin. It'll look to him like nothing's changed since the gang left.
The Texans continued watching as the man rode closer. A moment later, he reined his horse to a halt and sat there motionless in the saddle.
Could be studying the place through field glasses.
Yeah. I hope all those troopers stay out of sight.
At least the sun ain't shining bright. It won't reflect off a rifle barrel or anything like that.
The rider took his time assessing the situation in the canyon. The minutes that he sat there on his horse passed even more slowly than they had while Bo and Scratch were waiting for someone to show up. Finally, the man turned his horse around, drew his rifle from its saddle boot, and raised the weapon over his head, pumping it up and down 3 times. It was an unmistakable signal to someone who was still out of sight. Not for long, though. Several more men on horseback appeared and joined the first one. They rode toward the cabin at a fairly leisurely pace.
I only count 4 of them. You reckon the others got killed when they hit the bank in Deadwood? That'd make things easier for us. They might give up for sure when they see we got them outnumbered more than 2-1.
Maybe. Or maybe they're just being careful.
A moment later, more riders came into view, and Bo knew his second speculation had been right. From the looks of it, the whole gang had survived, which meant that the odds had tipped slightly to the outlaws' side.
Something's funny here, Scratch. It looks to me like there are 2 more riders than left here last night. They brought a couple of people with them.
Who do you reckon that could be?
I don't know. Might be that ringleader the devils are working for. Or they could have grabbed some hostages and brought them along.
Bo stopped short as shock coursed through him. The second group of riders was close enough now that he could make out more details. 2 figures who rode in the center of the group, surrounded by the outlaws as if they were being guarded, were hatless. Blonde hair and red hair stood out as splashes of color against the snowy background. Scratch recognized the riders, too.
Is that?
Yeah. Marty Sutton and Sue Beth Pendleton. And it looks like they're prisoners. Those young troopers better not have itchy trigger fingers. It wouldn't take much to get those women killed.
I reckon not. 1 shot would start the ball.
We're gonna have to make a trade.
What sort of trade?
Gold and safe passage out of here in return for the women.
Safe passage for who? Those murdering owl hoots?
I don't like it any more than you do. But the first consideration is saving the lives of those hostages. When the devils see that we got them covered, maybe they'll let Sue Beth and Marty go.
I don't think so. They'll know that as soon as those gals are clear, all hell's liable to break loose.
Probably, but we gotta try. I'm going out there.
They'll shoot you on sight.
Maybe not. Somebody's gotta negotiate with them, and they're more likely to pay attention to me if they can see me.
Well, then, I'm coming too.
No need for both of us to get killed in a fool play.
You just save your breath. If we're going, let's get out there.
He was right, Bo thought. The 4 men in the lead were only about 20 yards from the cabin now, and the rest of the group was about 10 yards behind them. The showdown couldn't be postponed.
Follow my lead.
Bo moved to the door, pulled the latch string, and swung it open. He stepped out into the gray light with his rifle held ready. Bo and Scratch had lifted their rifles to their shoulders and drawn beads on the men in the lead. The outlaws weren't wearing their bandana masks now. Their faces were uncovered, and they were a hard-looking bunch.
Hold it! Everybody hold your fire and stay calm!
Several of the outlaws started to reach for their guns. It was an instinctive reaction when they were threatened. But one of the riders who had led the way up the canyon flung out a hand and gestured sharply. The one who seemed to be the boss was tall and powerfully built, with a close-cropped dark beard and mustache. Something about him was familiar, and Bo had a pretty good hunch what it was. He stole a look at the man's left hand holding the reins and saw that the little finger was missing.
Hold it! They wouldn't step out in the open like that if they didn't have more guns pointed at us.
You're right about that, mister. There are enough rifles pointed at you right now to shoot all of you into little pieces.
Including those 2 women? Because I guarantee you, Tex, if we get shot to pieces, they will too.
Maybe nobody has to get killed. Let the women go and we'll talk about it.
Like hell. We let the women go and your bushwhackers open up on us a second later. That's assuming you've even got any bushwhackers hit out. Maybe the whole thing's just a bluff after all. Maybe it's just you 2 troublemaking pieces of Texas trash trying to get in our way.
Mister, you better watch what you say about Texas.
Or what? You can't start the ball any more than we can. Not without those gals getting killed.
Here's the deal. Let the women go. You can take that gold that's in the cabin and ride out of here. I give you my word on that.
If we kill you, what's to stop us from just taking the gold?
You'll never be able to get to it. It'll be blown to kingdom come. There are 5 kegs of blasting powder in there, and the fuses attached to them are already lit. They got maybe another 2 minutes to burn. Maybe.
You can't, you fools! The blast will kill you too!
We'll chance it. Now, what's it gonna be?
He saw Bardwell wavering and knew the man was about to agree to the deal. But bad luck chose that moment to crop up.
Oh my God, we're all gonna die!
Sue Beth yanked her horse around. She drove her heels into the animal's flanks and sent it lunging against the horse of one of the outlaws surrounding her and Martha Sutton.
Shit!
The man instinctively jerked his gun up toward her. Scratch took aim with his rifle, killing the outlaw instantly. He toppled out of the saddle. The explosion of the shot set off a frenzy of violence. Several of the outlaws jerked their guns out and started blazing away at Beau and Scratch, who had no choice but to return the fire as they backed hurriedly toward the door of the cabin. At the same time, Gustafson and the rest of the troopers opened up on the gang. Some of the devils twisted in their saddles to return that fire as well. Not Black Tom Bardwell, though. He whirled his mount and spurred down the canyon, obviously trying to escape the deadly crossfire. As bullets whipped around him, he leaned over and grabbed the trailing reins of the horse belonging to the man Scratch had shot. The Texans had reached the doorway and crouched just inside it, using the jams as cover while they battled with the outlaws.
Bardwell's getting away!
Beau caught a glimpse of Bardwell leading that riderless horse and knew the packs on the animal must hold some of the loot they had taken from the bank in Deadwood. Some of the other men were fleeing too, including a couple who had hold of the reins attached to the horses carrying Sue Beth and Martha. Beau tried to line up a shot at them, but he held off on the trigger as he realized he couldn't risk it. There was too great a chance of hitting one of the women instead. Grimacing, he switched his aim to one of the outlaws who was firing a six-gun at him and blew the man out of the saddle. Beau and Scratch held their fire as they realized that five of the outlaws were down, and the others, along with Sue Beth and Martha, were already a considerable distance down the canyon and getting farther away by the second.
We gotta go after them.
Yeah. Hold your fire! Hold your fire!
Hold your fire, men! That's an order!
As the firing finally died down, Beau and Scratch ran for the trees where their horses were hidden, along with the other mounts. One of the cavalrymen who had been concealed in the trees was down, thrashing around. Another lay close by, motionless. Splashes of blood crimsoned the white snow around them. A third trooper knelt beside the wounded one, trying to help him. Beau wished he and Scratch could stop and help, but the lives of the two women were still at stake. They jerked their reins loose and swung up into the saddles. As they rode out of the trees, they saw Sergeant Gustafson running toward them.
Wait a minute, where are you going?
After the devils!
I got wounded men!
Then tend to them and guard the gold in the cabin! We're going after the devils!
Blast it, I'm coming with you!
The Texans didn't wait any longer. They thundered after the outlaws, leaving Gustafson behind them with his mouth still open.
That was a hell of a bluff you came up with! For a second there, you almost had me believing we were about to get blowed up! That boss outlaw believes it too!
Yeah, I know. I just wanted to get the women out of the line of fire.
It almost worked!
Almost, but not quite.
It was easy to follow the trail left in the snow by the fleeing outlaws and their prisoners. Bardwell must have decided to cut his losses. He had most of the loot the devils had taken from the Deadwood Bank, and he had a couple of hostages. Leaving behind the gold in the cabin must have been a bitter pill to swallow, but it was better than staying and getting shot. Beau wondered if a posse had followed the outlaws from Deadwood. If it had, there was a chance he and Scratch could catch the devils between them and the townsmen. They reached the mouth of the canyon, where the trail swung to the left, away from Deadwood, and deeper into the rugged hills. They hadn't run into a posse along the way, so the possibility of closing the jaws of a trap on the devils was gone. Beau and Scratch would continue the pursuit anyway. As best as Beau had been able to count in the heat of battle, seven of the outlaws had escaped. The horses were starting to flag a little after the hard run down the canyon. Beau and Scratch reined them back to a walk.
Them devils have been around here for a while. They probably know this part of the country better than we do right now.
More than likely. But with this snow on the ground, they'll have a hard time giving us a slip. They probably know that, too. So we better be on the lookout for an ambush.
The trail rose steadily, climbing toward a rugged-looking, snow-covered mountain several miles away. Both Texans checked their back trail from time to time out of habit.
Riders coming up fast behind us, Beau.
Scratch and Beau reined in. Beau turned to look and saw the men Scratch had spotted. Half a dozen of them came across the snow-covered landscape, pushing their horses hard.
One of them's wearing a uniform. I'll bet you a dollar to a donut that's Olaf.
No bet. But who are the others?
There was only one reasonable answer to that, and as the riders came closer, Bo saw that his hunch was right. He recognized the lean, hawk-faced figure of Sheriff Henry Manning and knew the lawman was leading a small posse from Deadwood. The identities of a couple of the other men were surprising, though. Reese Bardwell and Philip Ramsey were riding with the sheriff.
Son of a gun! The old-timer's with him.
Bo nodded, having also recognized Chloride Coleman. The final member of the posse was Andrew Kiefer, the superintendent of the Golden Queen Mine. The Texans waited while the posse caught up to them.
I told you I was coming with you.
Where's the rest of the patrol?
I left them at the hideout. I lost 3 men in that fight, and a couple of the others were wounded. I figured there needed to be 2 healthy men guarding that gold at least.
You're right. Have you filled in the sheriff on what happened?
The sergeant told me about the fight with the devils. We ran into him at the mouth of that canyon where the hideout is located. We'll go back there and pick up the gold once we've rescued the women and dealt with the devils.
You sound mighty sure about that, Sheriff.
Why shouldn't I be? From what Sergeant Gustafson tells me, the odds are about even.
Yeah, but there's something you don't know.
Before any of them knew what was happening, Bo drew his Colt and leveled it at Reese Bardwell.
You got one of the devils riding with you.
What in blazes are you talking about? By God, Creel, I'm getting tired of you pointing a gun at me.
You don't have much room to complain, considering that just a little while ago, your brother and his men were doing their best to kill us. They did kill 3 of those troopers, and we don't know yet if the women are still all right.
My brother? You're crazy. My brother's dead. He was killed in a shootout with marshals down in Kansas.
Then you don't deny he's an outlaw?
Why should I? Sheriff Manning already knows about it. He's seen the wanted poster on time. I never lied about it to anybody who was man enough to come up and ask me. Most people would rather just sneak around and spread gossip, though.
Just how sure are you that Tom Bardwell is dead?
Well, I heard that he was badly wounded when a posse chased him and his gang down. He dropped out of sight after that, and everybody figured he was dead.
But you don't know that for certain. I saw him with my own eyes this afternoon. He matches the description and the drawing on the wanted poster right down to the missing finger on his left hand.
You know how he lost that finger?
I don't have any idea.
I cut it off with an axe. I didn't mean to. Yeah, we were just kids, and I was trying to split some wood for the fireplace. I was having trouble with it, so Tom went to grab the chunk of wood and steady it. The axe slipped. Lord, I never will forget seeing that finger go flying in the air.
Put your gun away, Creel. I believe Bardwell. Maybe his brother is the leader of the devils. But if that's true, Bardwell didn't know anything about it.
You're betting a lot on a hunch, Sheriff.
Don't you do the same thing sometimes?
Yeah, you got me there.
Far be it from me to defend the man, but if you'd seen how he was carrying on when he heard that Marty had been taken prisoner, you'd believe him, Mr. Creel.
I've got just as much right to be worried about her as you do, Ramsey. What are you doing here anyway? And don't call her Marty.
I have just as much right to call her Marty as you do, Bardwell. A woman like that needs a man with culture and intelligence.
I'm smart enough to run a blasted mine and not sit around all day scribbling numbers in a book.
Chloride moved his horse over next to Bo and Scratch.
It's mighty good to see you boys again. I reckon you figured out by now them two are both mooning over the same gal.
Yeah, and it don't seem likely Bardwell would feel like that if he's mixed up with his brother robbing the gold wagons.
I know we haven't gotten along, but I give you my word. This is the first time I've heard about Tom being anywhere in this part of the country. I was in Deadwood this morning, but I didn't see the robbery take place. Even if I had, I might not have recognized him since he was masked. It's been years since we've seen each other.
Are we going to believe him?
Bo slid his revolver back in its holster.
I reckon we ought to let the horses rest for a few minutes longer. While we're waiting, how about somebody telling us exactly what happened in town this morning?
We've already wasted enough time. I think we should push on after them right now.
Creel's right. We've ridden hard all the way from Deadwood. I don't like letting them get any farther ahead of us than you do, Ramsey. But if we kill these horses, the bastards will get away. And there's no doubt about that.
Now, what about that robbery?
They must have gotten into town just before dawn and broken into the bank somehow. The first anyone knew something was going on was when they blew the door off the vault. There was no way to hide that. I was in my office when I heard the blast. I grabbed a shotgun and headed toward the bank. Figured that was where the explosion had to come from.
I was in my room at the boarding house. I heard the explosion too and came out to see what was going on. I had to dive for cover a minute later because when the outlaws came out of the bank, They came out shooting.
How'd they wind up with the women?
Some of them must have gone across the street to the Red Top earlier to grab some hostages. I had taken cover behind a parked wagon and was trading shots with them by then. But I had to hold my fire when they came out dragging Mrs. Pendleton and Miss Sutton.
I saw that too. I rode into town last night to talk to Mr. Nicholson. It was so late when we finished up, I spent the night on a cot in the back room of the office. The explosion and the shooting woke me up. I wasn't armed then, so there was nothing I could do. But when I saw they had Marty, I wanted to charge them anyway.
How gallant.
Bardwell turned toward Ramsey and might have swung that big fist of his if Manning hadn't stepped between them.
Fighting each other isn't going to accomplish anything.
The lawman turned back to Bow and Scratch.
Some of the townspeople had joined in the fight. But once the devils had the two women as hostages, everyone had to hold their fire. They made it to their horses, stole a couple of mounts from a hitch rack for the women, and galloped out of town. I put together a posse and came after them as fast as I could, but it took a little while.
No offense, Sheriff, but this isn't much of a posse.
People are still afraid of the devils, some of them even more so, now that they've dared to invade the town itself. I had more men with me when we left, but they dropped out during the day, one or two at a time, and headed back. It's cold, and it's going to be dark after a while, and like I said, people are afraid of the devils.
But the trail went past the Golden Queen, so me and Andy here joined up when the posse came through.
You didn't see that the outlaws had Miss Sutton with them?
We didn't actually see them. Heard some horses this morning, but they were on the other side of the canyon, out of sight of the mine.
We didn't know what happened until Sheriff Manning stopped to tell us.
We followed the trail on up here, ran into Sergeant Gustafson, and then caught up to you two. Now you know as much as we do. We better mount up and get after them again.
You're right, Sheriff. We don't need to push the horses too hard, though. Save something for a hard run later if we need it.
Makes sense. Let's go.
They swung up into their saddles and set off after the devils. The wind began to pick up late in the afternoon, which added to Bo's worries. He turned to Scratch as they rode side by side, just behind Henry Manning, who continued to lead the posse.
It starts to snow again. Those tracks we've been following could fill up.
Yeah, I thought of that too. We need to get in front of them somehow. I wonder how well Chloride knows this part of the country.
Let's ask him.
The old-timer was bringing up the rear on his mule. Bo and Scratch dropped back, letting Gustafson, Bardwell, Ramsey, and Kiefer go past them, and fell in on either side of Chloride. He looked back and forth at them with narrowed eyes.
You boys got something in mind. I can tell by looking at you.
You have any idea where those varmints might be heading?
How should I know? Do I look like a bandit to you?
We thought maybe you'd know a good place for them to set up an ambush. They got to have a pretty good idea that we're on their trail, and they're bound to want to get rid of us.
Well, back in my prospecting days, I wandered up and down a bunch of these canyons and climbed some of the mountains, including that one it looks like they're heading for. There's a place called Wolfhead Rock that got the name because...
It's shaped like a wolf's head.
Are you telling this story or am I?
Go ahead, Chloride.
Well, anyway, there's a pass on the south side of the mountain that's the easiest way to get through to the other side, especially now with this snow. The other passes are narrow enough, they're gonna be drifted up, so it'd be hard to make it through them, even though this wasn't that bad of a storm. The thing of it is, Wolfhead Rock sort of sits there overlooking the trail to the pass, so you can't get up there without riding by it. Once you go past, there's a trail that loops back around to the top.
And some riflemen hidden up there could pick off anybody who rode past.
If I was on the run and trying to get shut of a posse, that's the way I'd go, sure enough.
The devils ride past the rock and leave plenty of tracks so the posse has to follow them. Then they circle around, get above the trail, and wait to bushwhack who's ever following them.
Yep. It's just a guess, mind you. But if the trail we're following goes past Wolfhead Rock, I'd bet my last dime those varmints will be up there laying for us.
Is there any way to get up to the rock without going past it and then doubling back?
Yeah, if you're a...
Don't say a mountain goat, please.
How'd you know what I was going to say?
Because I keep having to climb and I don't like it much.
But you could climb down to Wolfhead Rock from the backside of it?
Yeah, maybe. With this cold and snow and the fact it'll be getting dark soon, I don't know. Sounds to me like a good way to get killed.
There are a lot of good ways to get killed out here. Do you know a shortcut that might get us there before the gang so we can be waiting for them?
I can get you there, but not before the devils. They've got too big a start on us.
It's gonna be dark soon. If the posse makes camp, the devils will have to wait for them to come along in the morning. That'll give us time to slip in the back and maybe get those gals out of there.
You mean to take the women back up that rock wall you'd have to climb down? You can't do it. They'd never have a chance.
Then we can take the devils by surprise while they're waiting for the others. We'll hit them from behind and distract them while the rest of you gallop past, circle around on that trail, and come at them from that direction. We can cut down the odds, grab the hostages, and get them out of harm's way while the rest of you charge up there and finish off the outlaws.
Yeah, that's a mighty fine plan. If it works.
All plans are fine when they work. You got any better ideas, old-timer?
I ain't gonna sink to your level and dignify that with an answer. Bo, I reckon if you want to give it a try, I can show you where to go.
Let's talk to Manning and the others.
Bo rode forward and asked the sheriff to call a halt while they discussed the plan. Manning did so, and Bo laid out the idea.
You'll just get Marty and Mrs. Pendleton killed.
That is, if you even get there, you'll probably fall and break your necks.
Have you ever been to the top of this Wolf Head Rock, Coleman?
Yeah, I've been up there. The rock sits out in front and narrows down so it looks like a wolf's snout. There are a couple of spires, one on each side, that form the ears. Back of that is the open ground that's at the top of the trail from down below, and back of that is an even bigger rock that forms a cliff. I've been thinking about it. That rock sort of pooches out. You can't climb down it. Not even a mountain goat could. You'd have to be a fly to make it.
How about lowering us on ropes?
Well, maybe. You can't get horses up there. You'd have to make it on foot and find places to tie the ropes. I reckon it could be done, but... Whew, one slip and you're a dead man.
We're willing to take that chance. What do you think, Sheriff?
We don't even know for sure they'll be up there to try to ambush us.
The devils love to bushwhack folks. They've done it over and over again.
If you're wrong, though, we've lost some time. And let them get even farther ahead of us. That could turn out to be fatal for those women.
It's a chance we have to take. If the devils wipe us out, Sue Beth and Marty are done for.
You can't let that happen.
I agree. We have to try it, Sheriff.
All right. The rest of us will find a place to camp, and the three of you...
We'd better get going. There ain't no time to waste.
Just remember that more than the safety of the women depends on you. We'll be riding past Wolfhead Rock in the morning. And if you're not up there to hit the devils from behind, we'll be right in their sights. It'll be like they're taking target practice on us.
Then you better wish us luck.
As the posse took up the trail again, Bo, Scratch, and Chloride veered away from the rest of the group. Since the decision had been made to head for Wolfhead Rock, they didn't have to worry anymore about following the tracks left by the devils. They could reach the place by the shortest, quickest route possible. Chloride knew some shortcuts through the rugged landscape, but he warned the Texans that they wouldn't be easy. That certainly turned out to be true. Chloride led them through brush-choked gullies, along knife-edge ridges, through gaps between giant rocks that were barely wide enough for a man on horseback to get through them, and down slopes that would have been steep and slippery under good conditions. The coating of snow just made them worse. Somehow, though, they always made it to where they were going. As dusk began to close in around them, Chloride paused and pointed across a valley that cut into the side of the mountain, now looming close and menacing above them.
Look over yonder. That place sticking out is Wolfhead Rock.
How in the world are we going to get there once it's dark?
Oh, don't worry. I know the way.
If it's like the way we've come so far, we'll never make it without being able to see.
There's seeing, and then there's seeing. I know where I'm going, dadgummit. The trail won't be too bad from here as long as you fellas just follow me and don't stray off.
We don't have much choice in the matter, do we?
Nope. Go ahead, Chloride. We'll be right behind you.
Dang well better be.
The men set off again. Chloride in the lead, Scratch following him, and Bo bringing up the rear. Chloride led them down into the valley. When they reached the bottom, they found a good-sized creek rushing through it.
All right, take a look.
Take a look at what? I can't see a dang thing. It's so dark. I can hear the stream, but I can't really see it.
Right there.
Bo's eyes made out a snow-covered shape arching up and out, but he couldn't discern any details.
What is it?
It's a rock bridge. A natural bridge over that creek. You don't want to slip off of it, neither. As cold as it is, if you go in the water, you're liable to freeze to death before we can build a fire to thaw you out.
Are you sure that's a bridge? It looks more like a rock that just sticks up a ways and ends in nothing.
It goes all the way across. Leastways it did the last time I was in these parts.
How long has that been?
Oh, a couple of years, I expect.
So the other side could have collapsed since then?
Could have, I suppose, but I don't believe it did.
You don't believe it did?
I'd feel a whole heap better about this if you knew for sure.
How much do folks ever really know for sure in this life? How do you know the sun's even going to come up in the morning? You don't. That's how.
All right, you made your point. I'll go first.
No, you won't. I've been leading the way so far. I'll go. That way, if I fall off, you'll know you'd better turn around and go back.
Before either of the Texans could argue with him, the old-timer nudged his mule forward. The animal seemed reluctant to start out on the stone bridge, but Chloride banged his heels against the mule's flanks and kept it moving. The mule picked its way up the arching bridge, and after only a moment, the Texans lost sight of Chloride in the gloom. Bo and Scratch heard the mule's hoofbeats, so they could follow Chloride's progress that way.
Chloride! Chloride, you all right?
Yep. Looks like the bridge is all still here. You'd best dismount and come across on foot, leading your horses. The snow's made the rock mighty slick. This old mule of mine almost slipped.
Well, why don't you just dismount where you are and go ahead on foot?
No room to do that. Just gotta hope the Jughead can make it, that's all.
Be careful, Chloride.
Made it! I'm on the other side. Come ahead, boys. Slow and easy and mighty careful-like.
Scratch didn't wait to discuss who was going to go first. He just gripped his horse's reins and started across the natural bridge.
Come on ahead, Bo. It's no worse than that time down Sonora way when we had to cross that big old canyon on the rope bridge.
As I recollect, we almost wound up dead that day.
Yeah, but we didn't.
Bo couldn't argue with that logic. He grasped his horse's reins a little tighter and started up the slope of the bridge, leading the animal behind him. The soles of his boots slipped a little on the snow that coated the rock, and he cautioned himself not to get impatient and rush things.
Easy. That's good.
He reached the top of the bridge's arch and started down the far side, being even more careful now. He began to be able to make out Scratch and Chloride at the other end. A moment later, to his relief and amazement, he was beside them.
Whew. This was the hard part, right?
Actually, yeah, it was. Until we get to Wolf Head Rock, that is. That's liable to be even worse.
The three of them started making their way out of the valley. And as Chloride had said, the going wasn't too difficult. A few minutes later, snow began to fall again. It wasn't coming down very hard, but Bo was glad it waited until they had crossed that stone bridge. Chloride followed a narrow game trail that zigzagged up the mountainside and then curled around it. The snow-covered ground had a certain luminosity to it that allowed the three men to see where they were going, despite the pitch-black skies. After what seemed like half the night, Chloride reined in.
We can't take the horses no higher. We'll have to leave them here. You want a rope?
Got one.
Scratch unfastened his lasso from the saddle. They tied the reins to the trunk of a stubby pine beside the trail. Then Chloride started climbing a rock-studded and brush-littered slope. The slope was steep enough to have all three men breathing hard after only a few minutes when they finally paused to rest.
How'd you find this place?
I was following the bighorn sheep. Whew. Got me the idea I wanted a set of them curly horns as a trophy. Don't know why. It was a darn fool notion, and I never did get a good shot at the blasted thing. But after a while, I come out on a ledge where the trail ended and realized I was up above Wolf Head Rock. Don't know if anybody ever set foot up there besides the Injuns. Probably ain't anywhere in these hills they ain't been at one time or another. Whew. Well, you ready to go some more?
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
They resumed their climb.
In places, it was so steep, they had to reach out and give each other a hand. But in time, they came to the ledge Chloride had mentioned. It was narrow, maybe 10 feet deep and twice that long. The Texans pressed their backs against the cold rock wall and rested there, catching their breath again.
We're getting... Am I too old for this?
Yeah, but I reckon it's better than not living this long.
Oh, amen.
They took their hats off. Then they stretched out on the snow-covered ledge and bellied up to the edge so they could look over. Bo had already smelled smoke, so he wasn't surprised when he saw a small fire built in a ring of rocks that had been stacked up to hide the flames. No one would be able to see the fire from the main trail below. Bo and his companions had a bird's-eye view from up here, though. The orange glow from the flames filtered out over the big level area that formed the top of the so-called Wolf's Head. Men moved around down there, talking quietly. The horses were off to the left, tied to a rope that was strung between two trees. Half a dozen pines bordered the open space on that side. Sue Beth Pendleton and Martha Sutton were sitting with their backs to two of those trees, huddled in their coats. Bo couldn't tell if they were tied to the pines or if the outlaws had left them loose because there was no place for them to go if they tried to escape. The devils were between the women and the narrow path that led down to the main trail. Scratch leaned his head close to Bo's.
We can get down there without them seeing us. We can grab the gals, hustle them behind those trees, and throw down on the varmints. Maybe ventilate a couple of them before they even know what's going on.
That's the way I figure it, too. That was a good guess you made about them being here, old-timer.
Now, don't you start... Oh, never mind. You gonna shoot without giving them a chance to surrender?
After all the things they done, you really reckon we ought to worry about that?
I ain't going to. I was just asking if you were.
We're not officially deputized, so Sheriff Manning doesn't need to know every little detail about what happens up here.
That sounds good to me. I ain't forgot how that big varmint carved those pitchforks on my friends. Don't know if I ever will forget it. You can see what I mean about the rock bulging out a little. Ain't no way to climb down.
And even using the lasso, it's gonna be hard to get down there quietly. We're gonna have to rig a loop under the arms of one of us, dally the rope around the rock, and let them down slow and easy.
Now, that'll work while there's still two hombres up here to hold the other one's weight low. Chloride ain't big enough to handle that chore by himself.
I'm willing to give it a try.
Nah, we'd just wind up making a racket and alerting the devils. And the second man probably fall 50 or 60 feet to boot. Looks like this is gonna be a one-man job.
Blast it, Bo!
Second man can get in the fight from up here. That'll be you, Scratch.
How come?
I'm a little lighter than you are.
Not so you notice. I bet there ain't 10 pounds difference between us and there never has been.
10 pounds can be a lot when you're lowering a fella on the end of a rope. Don't worry, you'll still get to shoot some of those road agents. In fact, you'll have an even better shot at them from up here.
Well, you got that right anyway. All right, me and Chloride will lower you down there. When you going?
Probably be better to go ahead and do it now. If we wait for morning, they'll be more likely to spot me. I can see some rocks down there where I can hide until I'm ready to make my move. That won't be until the rest of the posse gets here. Everything has to seem normal until then.
All right, let's find some place to dally that lasso.
I always knew at least one of us would wind up at the end of a rope, Bo, but I always figured it'd be me.
Bo took off his hat and coat and set them aside on the ledge. He would be cold down there without his coat, but he wanted the rope to have a nice secure fit around his chest and under his arms while Scratch and Chloride were lowering him. Chloride had found a little pinnacle of rock at the back of the ledge that would work as a place to secure the rope. He passed one end around it, gripped both parts of the rope, and leaned hard on it to make sure it would stand the strain of Bo's weight. The rock didn't budge. Meanwhile, Scratch fashioned the loop in the other end of the rope and lowered it over Bo's upraised arms. He snugged it tight under Bo's arms.
All right, you're ready to go.
Bo went over to the brink and sat down. Scratch and Chloride took up their positions, back a few feet from the rock spire. They gripped the rope tightly as Bo turned around and wriggled backward, letting his legs go off the ledge first. Carefully, Scratch and Chloride let the rope slide a little around the rock. Supported by the lasso, Bo slipped completely off the ledge and dangled there just under the rim. He nodded to Scratch and Chloride to let them know he was all right, although he wasn't sure they could see the gesture in the thick darkness. He gave the rope a sharp tug, the signal for them to let it down some more. It was a very uncomfortable feeling, having nothing but 50 or 60 feet of empty air under your boots. Without really thinking about it, Bo held his breath during the slow descent. He managed to turn around so he could look down and see what was going on in the camp below him. Several of the outlaws had turned in for the night, brushing snow off the ground so they would have clear spots for their bedrolls. Three men hunkered beside the little fire, drawing what warmth they could from the flames. Over by the trees, the prisoners appeared to be asleep now too, huddled at the base of those pines. Bo had let himself over the edge above a small cluster of rocks. They weren't quite big enough to be called boulders, but he thought they would do to keep him hidden. Whew. A feeling of relief went through him when his feet finally touched the ground. Quickly, Bo loosened the loop around his chest and took it off over his head. Scratch and Chloride would have felt his weight leave the rope. He gave the lasso a couple of quick tugs to let them know he was all right and that they should pull the rope back up. It went up a lot faster than it had come down. That left Bo crouched behind the rocks about 50 yards from the fire. The women were slightly to his left, also about 50 yards away, but at a different angle. Using a gloved hand, Bo brushed a clear spot behind one of the rocks and sat down. The cold from the rock seeped into him and made the chill even worse, although he wouldn't have thought that was possible. A few flakes of snow still drifted down from time to time. Bo felt them hit lightly on his face. Luckily, the wind had died down, so it wasn't blowing to add to his misery. Mexico, he thought. Next fall, he and Scratch would head south a lot earlier, for sure. Some sleepy little town across the border with a hotel and some cantinas. Huh? Bo didn't even realize he had fallen asleep until his head jerked up an unknowable time later. He looked at the sky and saw a slowly widening band of gray light on the horizon. Dawn wasn't far off. According to the plan hatched the day before, Sheriff Manning and the rest of the posse would be riding past Wolfhead Rock in about an hour if nothing had happened to delay them. Bo heard men talking and moving around. Carefully, he raised his head enough to look over the rock at the camp. A couple of the devils hunkered next to the fire, getting some coffee boiling. The rest of the outlaws were over by the jutting rock that formed the wolf's snout. One man crouched behind an ear, keeping an eye on the trail. Bo looked toward the trees and saw that Sue Beth and Martha were awake again and sitting up. One of the men at the fire stood up and walked toward them, carrying cups of coffee. Bo hoped the women hadn't been trifled with. So far, it appeared there was a good chance they had been left alone.
Coffee, ladies?
Yes, thank you.
When they took the coffee, Bo saw that their hands were tied together in front of them. That wasn't too bad. As long as their ankles weren't tied, he would be able to get them up and onto their feet without too much trouble. Having checked out the camp, Bo turned his head and tilted it back so he could look at the cliff looming above him. With the rope pulled back, he couldn't see any sign of Scratch and Chloride, which was what he expected. As long as they stayed away from the rim, the chances of the outlaw spotting them were pretty small. Bo stretched out as much as he could while staying hidden, trying to loosen up muscles grown stiff from sleep and cold. Now, it was just a matter of waiting. The snow had stopped during the night, and as the sky grew lighter, Bo saw that there were openings in the clouds. The overcast promised to break at last. He could tell now that the man who had taken the coffee to the women was Tom Bardwell. He was standing there talking to them. After a moment, Bardwell threw his head back and laughed, obviously amused by something he had just said. Bo didn't feel much like laughing. He would have much rather drawn his Colt and put a bullet through the outlaw's head. Bardwell turned and walked back to the fire. The other man had some breakfast ready by now. Bardwell took what appeared to be biscuits to the women.
You know, ladies, this may seem like a situation.
The women were able to handle them with their hands tied. Bardwell was still standing there talking to them when one of the other men called for him.
Tom!
What?
Bardwell swung around and hurried to join the rest of the gang. They all picked up rifles and moved closer to the point that overlooked the trail. Bo knew what that movement had to mean. The outlaws had spotted Manning and the other members of the posse riding toward Wolfhead Rock. The devils were now hiding behind the rocks and aiming their rifles down at the trail. None of them looked toward the trees where the women sat. It was time for Bo to make his move. Cold. cold, cramped muscles caused him to stumble a little as he came out from behind the rocks and broke into a crouching run toward the trees. 30 yards, 20, 10. Zubeth and Martha saw him coming by now and stared at him in wide-eyed shock. To them, it must have seemed as if he had appeared out of thin air. Martha was closer. He dropped to a knee beside her and pulled the clasp knife from his pocket. Bo looked up at the sound to see Zubeth Pendleton holding a small revolver in both hands and pointing it at him. And suddenly, everything snapped into place in his brain.
Drop the knife, Bo, and don't reach for your gun. I'll kill you both if I have to.
My God! Zubeth, what are you... Why?
Because she's a real leader of the Deadwood Devils. Isn't that right, Zubeth?
I said drop the knife!
Short-barrel guns like that aren't very accurate.
You're 4 feet away. I can't miss at this range.
Gunshot right now will spoil your little ambush, won't it? You want Bardwell and the rest of your hired killers to wipe out the posse from Deadwood.
Why wouldn't I want them dead? The whole town could burn to the ground with everybody in it, and I wouldn't shed a tear. I haven't cried since the day they came and told me my husband was dead.
That's not the town's fault.
No, but it was the mine's fault, and the town wouldn't be there if it weren't for the mines.
So you decided to ruin the mines, and you used Black Tom Bardwell to do it.
That's right. He showed up in Deadwood looking for his brother, but he stopped at the Red Top for a meal first. I could tell he was a hard, violent man. I had a hunch he was the sort of man who could help me. Even though I didn't know at the time he was an outlaw. I didn't know how right I was, but I found out the next morning after he'd spent the night at my place. He told me who he was and that his gang was hiding outside of town. They were the ones who had been pulling those stagecoach robberies. That's when I laid out my plan and invited Tom to join forces with me. I was able to help him with information. Everybody in Deadwood comes into my cafe. And you'd be surprised what people will let slip over pie and coffee.
Bardwell and the others didn't take you hostage after that bank robbery yesterday. You wanted to come along. That was your way of getting out of Deadwood without anybody knowing what you'd done. Bardwell wanted to take the gold and move on. And even though you hadn't caused enough trouble to make the mine shut down yet, like you planned, you know you couldn't keep going without him and the rest of the gang. So you pretended to be a prisoner. But why bring Marty along?
She happened to be in the cafe, and Tom thought he might need a real hostage before this was all over. I kept the pose going up until now, just in case this bitch somehow got away. I don't want the law after me, which means as soon as Tom and the others have taken care of the posse, both of you will have to die too. In fact, I think I'll just go ahead and kill you as soon as the shooting starts.
I thought you were my friend.
Maybe I would have been. If it hadn't been for the lust for gold that fills all of you mine owners.
But I never did anything to hurt you. I was sorry when your husband died.
Sorry's not good enough. Sorry won't bring him back.
Neither will killing anybody else.
Despite Bo's appeal to Subeth's conscience, he now realized that time had run out because Zubeth extended her arms, pointing the gun right at his head, and her fingers started to tighten on the trigger. Before the hammer could fall, Martha Sutton suddenly lunged towards Zubeth, and with her bound wrist, she hit Zubeth's arms and drove them upward just as the little revolver fired. Martha kept moving, lowering her shoulder and barreling into Zubeth with enough force to knock the older woman over backwards. As Martha and Zubeth struggled, Bo surged to his feet and whirled toward Wolfhead Rock and the Deadwood Devils. Several of them spun around. Bo fired again. Clutching his belly, the man staggered backwards and took one step too many. He toppled off the edge of Wolfhead Rock and plummeted toward the trail below. More shots rang out from the ledge above the camp as Scratch and Chloride joined in the fight. The devil scattered and sought cover among the rocks. From the corner of his eye, Bo saw Mark slam clubbed fists against Subeth's face. The older woman sagged, obviously stunned. Bo triggered another shot. Then bent to grab Martha's arm and haul her to her feet. At the same time, he kicked away the little revolver Zubeth had dropped.
Get behind the trees!
Bo pushed Martha in that direction. He snapped a fourth shot toward the rocks where the devils had taken cover, and then darted behind one of the pines as soon as he saw that Martha was safe behind one of the thick-trunked trees. Bo took a moment to thumb fresh rounds into the empty chambers of his gun. While he was doing that, he heard the posse running the gauntlet down below. But with most of the devils shooting at him, Scratch, and Chloride, the chances of the lawman's entourage making it past Wolfhead Rock were a lot better. Bo snapped the Colt's cylinder closed and thrust the gun past the tree trunk. He slammed out three shots, just as one of the outlaws tried to dart from one rock to another. The man went down with a bullet-shattered shoulder. Bo glanced toward the path that led up from the main trail and saw the members of the posse surge into sight with their guns blazing. Two more of the devils went down. But Philip Ramsey pitched out of the saddle as a bullet tore through his arm. Sergeant Gustafson jerked as he was hit, but he managed to stay on his horse and kept firing the rifle clutched in his hand. Reese Bardwell's horse suddenly went out from under him. The big engineer was thrown clear. His rifle had flown out of his hands when he fell. Reese came up within arm's reach of one of the outlaws. The man fired at him at such close range that it seemed impossible for him to miss. Reese kept coming, though, swinging one of his huge fists in a sweeping blow and smashing into the outlaw's jaw. He sprawled on the ground, limp and motionless. Bo was watching as Reese Bardwell started to turn around. He saw the black-bearded figure leap out from behind one of the rocks and line his gun sights on Reese. Tom Bardwell might have hesitated for just a split second when he recognized his brother before the gun in his hand fired at the same time that Bo fired. Bardwell stumbled back a step and fell to his knees. Reese was still on his feet, holding a hand to his side now. Bo saw crimson welling between the engineer's fingers. Reese took a step toward his wounded brother.
You son of a...
Tom Bardwell, his face a twisted mask of hate, struggled to lift his gun and shoot his brother again. But his strength suddenly deserted him. The revolver slipped from his fingers and hit the ground. Bardwell followed it, flopping face first. Reese turned and looked at Bo for a second. Then he gave the Texan a curt nod of thanks. The shooting was over. The rest of the posse dismounted, and Sheriff Manning moved quickly to check the bodies of the outlaws who lay sprawled here and there on Wolfhead Rock. While Manning was doing that, Bo stepped over to a groggy Martha Sutton, who was shaking her head as she struggled to get to her feet. Bo took Martha's arm and helped her stand up. Sue Beth Pendleton was gone.
Are you all right?
Yes, I'm fine. But where's Mrs. Pendleton? Where did she go?
She must have slipped off during the ruckus.
Bo saw that the revolver Sue Beth had hidden somewhere in her clothes still lay on the ground where he had kicked it. He picked it up and tucked it behind his belt while he looked around for her.
Bo!
The shout from above made Bo look up. Scratch stood on the ledge with Chloride.
You all right, Bo?
I'm fine. I'm trying.
Look out!
Bo jerked around and... One of the horses belonging to the devils loomed up, practically on top of him. He caught a glimpse of Sue Beth riding the unsaddled animal as he threw himself out of the way just in time to avoid being trampled. He pushed himself to his knees as she galloped toward the path leading down to the main trail. Before she could reach it, Andrew Kiefer leaped in her way, waving his arms. The horse veered away from the stocky mine superintendent.
Mrs. Pendleton, wait!
Then Henry Manning tried to grab the bridle Sue Beth had slipped onto the horse, but she frantically jerked the animal away from him. The horse was already spooked from all the gunfire and powder smoke. It reared up and danced backward. Out onto the Wolfhead Rock it went, plunging and bucking. And Sue Beth fought to bring the horse under control, but its hooves slipped on snow-covered rock, and the horse's legs skidded out from under it. Bo and everyone else watched in horror as the horse slid off the edge, taking Sue Beth with it.
My God.
A big hand fell on Martha's shoulder, and she turned to find herself standing next to Reese Bardwell. She buried her face against his massive chest as a shudder went through her. A few yards away, Philip Ramsey stood with his right hand clutching his blood-stained upper left arm. He glared at Reese and Martha, and then shook his head. The young bookkeeper wasn't hurt too bad, Bo thought. At least not physically. He left Reese Bardwell comforting Martha while Ramsey looked on in disgust. Bo had spotted Olaf Gustafson sitting propped up against a rock. He hurried toward the sergeant and knelt beside him.
How are you, Olaf?
I think I'll live. A bullet got me in the side, knocked out a chunk of meat. But he went on through and didn't hit anything too important, I hope. I'm sorry about Mrs. Pendleton. What a tragedy.
You don't know the half of it.
By evening, everyone was back in Deadwood, except the troopers who had been left to guard the loot at the Devil's Hideout. The next day, Chloride and several other drivers would take wagons up there to retrieve the gold and bring it back to town, where somebody would have to sort out which part of it belonged to who. Bo was glad he wasn't going to have anything to do with that job. Rhys Bardwell, Ramsey, and Gustafson had had their wounds patched up by one of the local doctors, and they were all expected to make a full recovery. Sue Beth Pendleton's broken body was down at the Undertaker's, along with the bodies of the outlaws. John Tadrak was going to be busy for a while. It didn't seem right that those varmints would be laid to rest properly, while Lieutenant Holbrook and the other soldiers killed in the avalanche would probably sleep for eternity under those tons of rock. But that was the way of the world, Bo knew. Justice was a relative thing, and often incomplete. The Texans and Chloride were striding along the boardwalk when the door of the Argosy Mining Company opened and Lawrence Nicholson stepped out in front of them.
Good evening, gentlemen. I've been hoping you'd come along so I could have a word with you.
What do you want?
Why, I'd like to offer you your job back, Mr. Coleman. And I'd like for the two of you to work for me as well.
Where am I too old to swing a pickaxe?
Don't worry. I'll find something better than that for you. I'm sure I'll need some good men to guard our gold shipments.
You shouldn't have any more trouble. All the Deadwood Devils are either dead or behind bars in Sheriff Manning's jail.
The Deadwood Devils aren't the only bandits in the world, you know. I'm sure there'll be more trouble in the future.
Yeah, well, you're gonna have to find somebody else to handle it. We're making a run for Mexico as soon as the snow melts.
I can't persuade you to change your minds?
I'm afraid not.
That's too bad. I can't get you to work for me, and I'm going to be losing my chief engineer and superintendent, too. Possibly even my bookkeeper.
How do you figure that?
Now that Marty Sutton knows how Rhys and Philip feel about her, I fully expect both of them to resign from the Argosy and go to work for the Golden Queen, so they can continue their rivalry for her affections.
Now that could cause some problems.
Yeah, but somebody else will have to handle that fracas, too.
To tell you the truth, I'm not really that upset about it. I figure that sooner or later, Marty will decide between the two of them and then settle down to get married and have children. And then she'll let me buy her mine at a reasonable price. If you put the Argosy and the Golden Queen together, you know, it would be the biggest mining operation in this part of the country.
That thought crossed my mind.
Oh, well, good night, gentlemen.
How'd you feel about coming to Mexico with us, Chloride?
What? You mean you want to associate with an old-timer like me?
Well, I reckon we sort of got used to having you around.
Well, thanks, but no thanks. I got a job driving for Miss Sutton, and I intend to keep it. Besides, I got a feeling that being around the Golden Queen's gonna be pretty entertaining once those two young fellas are all healed up.
You're probably right about that.
Bo paused and looked across the street. The Red Top Cafe sat there, closed and dark. Bo couldn't help but think about how nice it would have been to walk into the warmth of that place, to have a bowl of stew and a piece of pie and a cup of coffee, to look across the counter and see Sue Beth Pendleton with a friendly smile on her face.
Smile and smile and be a villain.
What's that?
Nothing. Wind's turned around to the south. Feels a little warmer already. Won't be long before the snow's all gone. We can light a shuck for Mexico.
Sidewinders 5, Deadwood Gulch, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2011, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, Tim Carlin, Mort Shelby, Timothy Lynch, Terrence Azelford, Elizabeth Jernigan, Nanette Savard, Nick DePinto, David Coyne, Alexander Strain, Danny Gavigan, Christopher Graybill, Gregory Gorton, Richard Rowan, Stephen Carpenter, Johann Detweiler. Directed by Ken Jackson. Book adapted for graphic audio by Doug Krenzlin. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Temeskin Wubna. Title theme by Brian Patton. Original music by Johann Detweiler and Brian Patton. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Sidewinders, be sure to look for the series Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man, The First Mountain Man, as well as The Last Gunfighter. Available at Roadstops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our action-pumped titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com.
Available now in graphic audio.
Wanderer, I had a bad dream. I heard a voice calling me, Wanderer. I followed it through a dark mist until I saw wooden stairs built into the side of a huge mound. I walked up the steps into this big round room.
Ah, the Sun Chamber at the Temple Mound in Cahokia. I wonder what the Cahokians want with you. Theron, the Sun Chief, is not a good person to be wanted by. His madness started with Nightshade. Yes, Nightshade.
I hate this, Badger Tail. The Sun Chief has truly gone mad this time.
Theron frightens me too, but I cannot disobey my orders, Bobcat.
Leader Badger Tail wishes to speak with the great Moon Chief.
You're a bold man, Leader Badger Tail.
The Sun Chief needs a new priestess. He wants Nightshade.
She's not here.
Where is she?
We won't tell you. If you kill us, Nightshade will find you. She'll avenge us.
No! Father!
Pataga, you are the new Moon Chief.
So, you are mine again, Nightshade. I had no idea you'd grown up into such a beautiful woman.
Why did you order me brought back here, Theron? What is it you've done to anger the gods so much that they've abandoned us?
Don't ever ask me that again. Do you understand?
Hail Cloud!
Yes, my chief?
How many warriors survived Badger Tail's attack?
He left us about 100. If you're thinking of returning his attack, don't. We can't.
How many warriors survived at Hickory Mounds and the other villages Badger Tail has ravaged this cycle?
Well, it might work, my chief, if we can convince their people to fight with little food in their bellies.
Pataga is massing forces, war leader. He has already gleaned over 900 from the southern villages.
We must stop Pataga now.
All right, but first, before you attack Pataga, I want you to strike Redweed Village. And bring me the stone wolf that resides there.
But my chief...
I want that stone wolf! You will attack Redweed Village and get it!
Nightshade, tell me how to stop the killing. Can you?
No.
If you can't, who can?
A woman whom Wanderer is teaching. I don't know her name, but she's powerful. More powerful than I am.
Foe, grab Lycan! We have to try to get out through the window!
But they'll be watching! You know they will! They're probably waiting for
you! Foe!
Mother! Where's my mother?
Lycan, run!
What happened?
Run! We'll find you if we can!
Locust, what have you discovered?
About the Stone Wolf? Nothing.
Wanderer.
Badger Tail, it's been a long time.
Tell me where the wolf is.
No.
Why?
The wolf is a very great power object, but I will tell Nightshade.
Birdman, help me stay awake. I have to wait for Wanderer or my mother.
I hear you, little one.
Oh, Birdman, thank you.
Do you know why owls die with their wings outspread, little one?
They know that flight is their only hope of survival.
Will you give up, Lycan? Or will you fly for your people?
I want to fly, Birdman! I've always wanted to! Birdman, no! You're supposed to be my spirit helper!
Against the stunning backdrop of one of the greatest cities of the ancient world unfolds an epic tale of madness and revenge, of passion and redemption. Don't miss the next exciting installment of the North America's Forgotten Past series, People of the River, in rich, vibrant, graphic audio.
The name is Sardine.
Why were you trying to kill us, Sardine?
I wasn't aiming to kill you. All I wanted to do was hold you up for a while so as to keep you from getting home right away.
You wanted to keep us from getting home. Now, why would you want to do that?
To give Van Arnt time to catch your woman. I've done my job. By now, we've done took her, and I reckon you'll pay plenty to get her back.
Snatch my woman? Are you talking about Sally?
Is that her name? Sally? Well, now, that's a right pretty name. Yes, sir, it is. But then I've heard she's a real pretty woman. So I expect you'll pay pretty near any amount of money we ask for just to get her back now, won't you?
What happens when you take Smoke Jensen's wife?
Come on, Jensen, I gotta tell Van Arnt something. I can't go back to him and tell him you didn't say anything at all.
You don't have to worry about that.
What do you mean I don't have to worry about that?
I mean you don't have to worry about telling Van Arnt anything. Because you aren't going back.
Damn! That is the same thing she said.
That's what Sally told you, isn't it?
Well, see here, I ain't gonna let you work on my mind like that. I damn sure I'm going back.
No, you aren't.
We got your wife, don't you understand that?
And I've got you.
Bear witness to Violence of the Mountain Man. Mountain Man number 36. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.